Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of flavorful Kroger 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound. Then buy two, get two free on select varieties of delicious Doritos, Tostitos, or Ruffles chips, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, a podcast to promote and improve your practice as an athletic trainer. I am Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. And this one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/patellar instability, because that's what we're talking about with Dr. Jeremy Rush. He did a fantastic job presenting at the Trinity University Sports Medicine Conference. They are hosted by my friend Sean Reedy at Trinity University in San Antonio. And the presentation was fantastic. We were talking about
Ankle injury, syndesmotic injury.
Syndesmosis, yes. I was thinking foot, ankle, couldn't put it all together. Yes. So he did a great job. And one of the things that I loved was the connection with the audience, the level of presentation. It wasn't you were speaking to a surgeon doing the surgery and need to know all the intricate details, but you weren't speaking to a high school student. So you really connected with the level, and it was really appropriate for the audience. And I'm super excited that you reached out. And a little disclaimer, this is actually the re-record for with Dr. Rush. So we did Instagram Live and the recording, and then we had some audio issues after when we came back. However, we're still gonna have the same conversation. So if you want to check out the Instagram version, you can either find me on Instagram and find that post, or find Dr. Rush and on Instagram. He is SATX Sports Medicine, SATX Sports Medicine on Instagram. So if you want to find him there, that's where he likes to be. So this all kind of started with my sister-in-law, Caitlin. She was sitting on the floor with her kids playing around her, and one of them fell off the couch and her head fell right into her kneecap. So her daughter's head hit the lateral border of her kneecap. No, hit the medial border. Yeah, and then pushed the lateral border of the kneecap up and the medial border down into the groove, and then it was stuck like that. So then then her husband called me and said, "Hey, what can I do?" I was like, "Okay, well, here's what you got to try and do. You got to straighten the leg. You got to kind of, push it from the outside." Because I was thinking, oh, it was just a patellar dislocation. Well, I didn't know that it had flipped up like that until I got there. Well, they live like 30, 40 minutes away. So I drive out there. I can't get it. We call EMS. They're like, we haven't seen this. And then get to the hospital and the doctor says, well, I haven't seen one like this either. So it was just a whole situation. But you seen something like that, Dr. Rush?
I haven't seen something quite like that. And I know we talked about it a little bit. What ended up happening with your sister-in-law?
So they gave her some medicine in the ambulance and essentially calmed her down, put her to rest. And then he did put it back, but he said it took two people. So someone had to straighten out the leg, and then he had to essentially just grab and pull the patella up to lift up that the medial border to go back into place. But
yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. Usually with patellar dislocations, if you straighten the knee out, it tends to, pop back in. That's kind of your reduction maneuver. Sometimes you have to give it a little bit of a push, but it's usually, knock on wood, it usually goes back pretty easily. I think the thing when I talk to trainers or residents or ER docs, the thing you want to be careful about is trying to do it too forcefully. Especially if you had the knee flexed, that you get into trouble. If you have that knee flexed up and you're pushing on the kneecap, that's a great way to break off a piece of cartilage, break off, you know, a piece of cartilage and bone and have an osteochondral injury. So I think exactly what you said, you want to get the patient relaxed, get that knee straightened out. And then usually it kind of pops back in place, but yeah, that's a weird one. Right, so did she end up having surgery or PT or what kind of happened?
So she ended up going to PT. I think it was about 2 weeks because it happened right around the Christmas break. And so it was like 2 or maybe even 3 weeks before she could get into physical therapy, because you have to have the, you know, hour long block mm-hmm. for the exam, that kind of thing. And so I think she's done with physical therapy now at this point. I think she went through like 4 or 6 weeks. And it essentially is all better. It's still a little tender, like if she kneels down on the floor or something like that. But I mean, she's able to walk up and down stairs and lead with a injured leg rather than the normal or uninjured leg. So
mm-hmm. did she ever see a surgeon, or was it a, you know, internist, family practice doc type doc?
No, they went to an orthopedic doctor here in Houston. Okay. So
yeah. You know, the thing that's interesting, I'm always curious, you know, there's a lot of different ways to treat these injuries, a lot of different algorithms, you know, different surgeons kind of have their, you know, their algorithm or their kind of recipe for treatment. And there's probably not one right answer and wrong answer. There's a lot of different kind of variations. And I'm always curious, you know, I pick my partner's brains when I go to meetings, I ask guys, because there's definitely a lot of variability and you're always learning, you know, you're always kind of picking up new tips and new tricks and that sort of thing. But yeah. That's interesting.
So she was, when I got there, she was sitting kind of with her back propped up against the couch. Mm-hmm. Her leg was more or less flat. It's like, she, I think she had a towel underneath her knee, so, 'cause it hurt when it was all the way straightened out. Does it make a difference of the hip position in relocating the patella? Like, does it relax the muscles more if she lays flat, if she sits up? Does that change anything?
You know, I don't, it seems like you want, you know, the IT band, you know, the anatomy around the knee, the IT band definitely acts as a lateral stabilizer. You know, there are connections from the IT band to your lateral patella. So I have to think that you don't want that firing. If you know, your IT band or your tensor fasciata is firing, then that's going to promote the patella staying laterally. So I'm thinking in my mind, it seems like you'd want the hip just as relaxed as possible. You wouldn't want it internally rotated. You wouldn't want to be firing either your hip flexors or your, you know, your the lateral side, your glutes, your tensor fasciata. So I'd have to think just whatever position is comfortable and gets you relaxed.
So thinking about that, would it be, you said not internally rotated, do you think external rotation would make it any easier?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'd have to think. I mean, I think if you are just relaxed, you know, kind of that natural posture when you're relaxed, your hips do tend to, you know, externally rotate. Mm-hmm. So I think you'd want relaxation no matter what. So, you know, maybe you put a bump, a pillow, something underneath your booty on that side to kind of, you know, internally rotate your body, but allow your hip to externally rotate and relax. You know, I'm just kind of brainstorming and thinking through this, but I think you'd want, you know, it as relaxed as possible.
Gotcha. So it'd probably be good if you could, but not at the expense of them tensing up.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good way to put it. That's a much more eloquent way to put it.
Yeah, no, I mean, because I didn't think about this at the time or even the first time we had this conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, oh, hey, why didn't I do this? I didn't do that, you know, so it's just, all right.
You know, it seems like, you know, I've seen reductions where the patient just, you know, you gently straighten out the leg. The other time that sometimes it'll reduce is, you know, let's say you have a player, a football player, basketball player, what have you, when you go to stand them up, you know, you have them push off on their good leg, they stand up, but kind of as a byproduct of that, their injured leg straightens. And a lot of times you'll get that reduction with that as well, just kind of when they're standing up. But yeah.
All right. So we're talking about patellar instability. So I know we talked about the dislocation there and then, you know, it being relocated, but let's define kind of the patellar dislocation, subluxation, and instability as we're going to be kind of talking about them.
Okay. Yeah. So I think dislocation is a good one to start with. So patellar dislocation, it is dislocated. It comes all the way out of the trochlear groove, that groove in the femur where the femur or where the patella kind of slides up and down as your knee is flexing and extending. So patellar dislocation is when it comes all the way out. And we know that, you know, the overwhelming majority, you know, 95, 96, 97% of patellar dislocations are lateral. So the kneecap goes lateral. Subluxation is where it at least partially comes out of the groove, but not all the way. And you see these subluxation events, especially in patients with chronic patellar instability in that third term that you mentioned. So, you know, they'll have a subluxation event where they feel like it's coming in and out, but it doesn't dislocate all the way. So patellar instability is, you know, when you start having this as a chronic issue, whether it's during just sporting events, athletic events, or whether it's during ADLs and you know, just kind of daily life. So yeah, dislocation, subluxation, and an instability. I think, you know, when I think about dislocations, I also kind of, you know, I'm kind of a grouper, you know, I like not the fish, obviously, but I kind of like to group things, you know, into nice buckets, and that just helps me think about it. But when I think about patellar dislocations, I think about, you know, traumatic events. So, you know, a knee that may have some of those risk factors, but is otherwise, you know, has behaved appropriately and has worked appropriately for, you know, 14, 15, 16 years of life. And then they have a big dislocation event. They get slide tackled, you know, hit by a linebacker, what have you. And then they dislocate. So that's a knee that's been pretty normal that has a traumatic event and dislocate. So that's kind of one bucket. And then the other bucket is a patient that has a lot of these anatomic risk factors. They're, you know, they're just a setup for dislocation, and they start having dislocation events with, you know, non-traumatic things, going up and down stairs, getting up from their desk, getting up from the couch, you know, getting into a car. And that second group, you know, I see those patients earlier. You know, when I see a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, whose family says, yeah, you know, the patella has dislocated 40 times. It happens all the time. It happens when they, you know, stand up from the couch. You know, that's kind of a different bucket. That's a kid who's got a lot of risk factors, whether it's dysplasia or patella alta or torsional abnormalities. And that's one that's probably going to be a bigger issue down the road. So kind of those two buckets, if you will.
I got you. All right. So as we're talking about patellar instability, dislocation, subluxations, do you remember the first time you personally saw a patellar dislocation or subluxation?
So, I mean, I remember, so I was a firefighter before I went to med school. So when I was in college, I went to EMT school, and then I was a volunteer firefighter. I did EMS at Texas A&M. So shout out to Texas A&M EMS. But I remember seeing, you know, a patellar dislocation injury when I was doing my like clinicals as part of my EMS training. So that's, you know, and I saw them when I was in med school, and I wasn't an orthopedic physician. So, you know, I just remember it being a very dramatic, you know, it's a very dramatic injury. You know, your knee, anytime you have a dislocation, whether it's a shoulder or a finger or an ankle, you know, it's a very dramatic looking event, you know, families, you know, sometimes freaking out, coaches. So that's kind of what I remember. And I do remember it reducing fairly easily. And I remember kind of thinking, oh, okay, all right, well, that's it. Because it is one of those that's a pretty dramatic, pops back in, and it's something you can do.
Yeah. And then usually there's like, oh, it's like such a relief, right?
That's correct. That's correct. Exactly. What about you? When was, so was it your first one during AT clinicals or during preceptorship, or when do you remember yours?
The first time I remember seeing a patella dislocation that I was involved in reducing was at a club volleyball tournament. I was working contract work, and it was probably 6 years into being a professional as an athletic trainer. And it was the girls on the volleyball court, and, you know, laying there. Oh, yep, I see your kneecap. All right, well, here, let's straighten this out. And poop, and it just slides right back in, and it's like, oh, okay, all right, well, now let's get you over here. You know, obviously you're not gonna be able to play, but it was just, I don't know, it was, I don't want to say picturesque or whatever, but it was just like the perfect scenario. It's just laying there, and I just come, and I'm the big hero. I rescue, you know, the girl.
Then now yeah, I mean, those, when it happens like that, whether it's a shoulder dislocation, you know, Friday night, or a patellar dislocation or finger dislocation during basketball, you know, those are fun. Those, I mean, not fun for the patient, obviously, but you know, those are kind of cool. You know, you have something broken, something that's wrong, you make it better. And, you know, it's very rewarding. So.
All right. So in your time with the military, do you remember seeing any sort of, injuries that kind of encouraged you to look, kind of do orthopedics?
Well, so I was an orthopedic surgeon in the military. So I, you know, kind of my path, I went to A&M for undergrad, and I knew I wanted to join the Army at some point. My dad was career Army, both my granddad served. So I knew I wanted to do that at some point. When I got into medical school, the Army actually has a scholarship program. So I joined the military between college and med school. So basically, I think I signed my paperwork October of 2001, October, November, 2001, and started, you know, started medical school summer of 2002. I was class of 02 for undergrad. So the military paid for my medical school. It was an Army scholarship. I, you know, had to go do stuff during the summer with them. But then when I finished med school and I was a physician, I did my orthopedic residency here in San Antonio at the Army Hospital at Burke Army Medical Center. So, you know, my pretty much my entire military time started with me being in med school, with the goal of being a physician. And then I decided I wanted to do orthopedics pretty late, kind of late in my third year of med school. Most guys go into med school knowing they want to do ortho and, you know, or at least figuring it out their first or second year. But I actually came to it kind of late. I came to it my third year of med school.
What kind of drove you to orthopedics?
So my plan was to do emergency medicine, having done EMS and having done, you know, fire department stuff. You know, my mentors were ER doctors. That was what I knew. It's what I loved. I, you know, I still, at some point, you know, I'd love to go back and be a volunteer firefighter. Maybe when I retire. But my whole plan when I came into med school was to be an emergency medicine physician and do ER. And that was the plan all the way up until my third year. And the cool thing about medical school is, you know, your first 2 years, you're just in the classroom for the most part. You're in the classroom doing biochemistry and anatomy and physiology and that sort of thing. And then your third year of med school, everybody does pretty much the same core clinical rotations. So even if you said, hey, look, I want to be a plastic surgeon or I'm going to be a pathologist or what have you, you still have to do internal medicine. You still have to do, you know, obstetrics and gynecology. You have to do pediatrics. You have to do these core things that everybody should be, you know, have some exposure to. And when I did my surgery rotation, I got to spend a couple of weeks with orthopedics and I just loved it. You know, I had fun. I genuinely had fun when I was at work. I was taking call every third night, you know, working at 2-3 AM, but you know, it's very much a team environment. And most of what, it sounds horrible, so don't judge me, but you know, I really enjoyed taking someone who was broken and being able to work to get them fixed. You know, it's kind of simplistic and I guess it's a cliche, but a lot of medicine today is prescribing medication. You have, and again, I should be careful, but you know, you have patients that smoke or drink or overeat or not healthy, and you give them medicine and you know, patients are on 10, 15, 20 different types of medications, but they keep smoking, they keep making poor life choices. And I found that really, really, really frustrating. I did not like kind of that part of my medical school experience. And I don't think I'm alone in that. And orthopedics was a little different. It was much more, you know, you're working with your hands, it's more technical, if you will. You can see the end product, and I like that. And I especially like taking care of younger patients. So that's kind of where my career has gone, is primarily taking care of pediatric and young adult athletes, you know, from middle school, high school, college. And it's just, you know, it's a great patient population. So sorry, it's kind of a long-winded answer.
No, it's fantastic. It was here in the background. So going back to patellar instability, as you were talking about putting people back together, one of the things that I don't fully understand, I didn't get all the details from my sister-in-law, Caitlin, is the doctor, either it was the ER doctor or the orthopedic doctor, said that within 30 or 45 minutes, like a jelly substance starts to set in with the patella dislocation, maybe is like swelling or something like that. Can you help me understand? Do you have any idea like what they were talking about?
I'm not sure. What do you mean by jelly?
Well, that's
like an infusion, like a hemarthrosis.
That may have been what he was talking about, is like, you know, it starts to gel together, or it starts to like gel in that situation. So maybe it was just the swelling would prevent it from going back in.
I don't know. I mean, you know, when you dislocate, you always get that big effusion, you know, you always get that big hemarthrosis because, you know, your patella goes laterally. So those medial structures, your MPFL, your medial retinaculum, you know, you stretch, you injure those ligaments and that soft tissue. So, you know, invariably you get swelling, bleeding inside the joint, and, you know, and that's an important thing to think about, because since you have all that swelling in the joint and your quad is weak and you're in pain, you know, those first several days are kind of when you're a setup for your patella dislocating again. And you can just imagine if you have all that fluid inside your knee, you know, it's kind of driving your kneecap. It's kind of driving your patella away from the trochlea and laterally anyway. So I always tell patients, you know, those first several days after your injury, you got to be careful, And for me, I usually put people in a knee immobilizer for 10 to 14 days, somewhere in that range. Especially things like getting in or out of a car or in or out of the shower, you know, that's kind of the place where a lot of patients will re-dislocate if they're not careful.
Yeah. That twisting and unloading or loading of the weight.
Right. Exactly.
You don't want to see somebody falling halfway out of the car because their kneecap dislocates.
No. And you definitely, you know, and you definitely don't want to be in the shower. You know, especially as a teenager, that's tough. You know, if you're naked and you got to call your parents in to help you get up.
Yeah, I would have had to tell my sister-in-law she was on her own.
Yeah. So you gotta be careful with that. Nobody wants to see that. But yeah. So, you know, after that first dislocation, I think I'm pretty aggressive or conservative, I guess, depending upon how you look at it. You know, I definitely get patients into therapy. I do the knee immobilizer for about 2 weeks, and then I get them into a patellar stabilizing brace. We start PT pretty much immediately, working on edema control, getting back their quad function, working on range of motion, hip and abductor strengthening, kind of all those components. I see them back at 6 weeks, make sure they're doing better. I say, hey, that's great, you're doing better, but you're still not cleared yet. I tend not to clear people for contact sports until 2.5 to 3 months. And what I tell them is, look, you know, your best shot at this not happening again is right now. Once your patella dislocates a second or a third time, you know, it's probably going to happen again. Every time it dislocates, that risk of recurrence keeps going up. So I tell them, you know, right now is your best shot, and we're going to be careful. We're going to take our time and make sure that you're as tuned up as you can be before we cut you loose.
All right. So as we're talking a little bit about the traumatic event of the dislocation, you know, from being hit by your child falling on your leg or being hit in sports, that kind of thing. Let's talk a little bit about the patellar instability, where you said it's a more of a chronic, you know, these things are continuing to happen, maybe even to a 10-year-old. What are some of the signs, the symptoms? Because you said there's anatomical signs and symptoms or things like that.
Well, a lot of things, you know, so there's a lot of, just like ACL tears or shoulder injuries, you know, there's things that predispose people. So if your trochlea, the top side of your femur where the patella, you know, where it kind of, rides back and forth, if that trochlea is shallow, it's called trochlear dysplasia. That's a risk factor. If your patella sits a little higher, patella alta, that's a risk factor. Women are at a higher risk, probably because of hyperlaxity and because of increased Q angle. Q angle being that, you know, kind of a knock-kneedness, if you will, that valgus alignment at the knee. And then I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple. Oh, like rotational abnormalities. So if you have femoral aniversion, external tibial torsion, you know, those things are all risk factors. So once you have someone who is having multiple dislocation events and has chronic patellar instability, you know, they'll tell you, hey, my kneecap feels unstable. I can't trust my knee. It feels like it's going to give way. If they have a big loose body, they'll have clicking, catching, they'll have recurrent swelling. A lot of times they'll have pain going up and down stairs, kind of patellofemoral pain type symptoms. But you know, it can be kind of variable. Patients don't always come in saying, hey, I have chronic patellar instability. They'll say my knee feels weird. It feels wonky, feels unstable. And you got to tease out, you know, when did that start and what exactly is kind of going on here?
Okay. So tease it out for us. How do we go from there?
So on exam, I mean, the things that I do on exam, you know, lateral, you check your translation, check the translation of the patella. And if your patella translates laterally more than the other side, you know, if it's three or four quadrants, that's a tip off for patellar instability. The other thing is they'll have apprehension. So as you start pushing on that kneecap, they're like, hey, that feels weird. I feel like my patella is going to dislocate. They'll be upset. So patellar apprehension, the J sign, where as your knee goes from extension to flexion or vice versa, it pops over as it pops into the groove. You know, those are all kind of the physical exam findings that you'll see. And then, you know, I get an MRI, you know, if in a patient who's got chronic instability, and you can see chondral injury to the patella or the trochlear or the lateral femur. You can see the MPFL is damaged, it's stretched out, the patella is laterally subluxed. So those are kind of all the tip-offs. You know, patients don't always say my patella dislocated. So if someone has a twisting injury playing soccer, right, and they can't tell me exactly kind of what's going on, then I get an MRI, you know, at that first clinic visit. Because I want to make sure they don't have a meniscal injury, ACL injury, make sure there's not something else going on as well.
All right. So one of the things with my sister-in-law, again, the ortho said that you don't need to get an MRI, right? And because hers wasn't chronic and she knew exactly what happened. And I'll just kind of answer those questions there. And so is that something that's normal? Like you would say, okay, if I know what happened, if they said for sure, you know, it was out and it went back in, or I know for sure somebody put it back in for them and then they came in and they're not having any other complaints. When do you decide on the MRI?
Yeah, no. And I agree with that surgeon. So if you have a known dislocation event and your x-rays don't show a loose body, you know, don't show an osteochondral fracture, then I don't get an MRI either for a first time dislocation event. Now, I think the second part of your question is when would you? I would get an MRI if I'm worried about a loose body, because if they knocked off, you know, a piece of cartilage, you know, that's something you want to fix sooner rather than later. So if they have a huge effusion, you know, frank mechanical symptoms, or if you see something on x-ray, then that's when I would get an MRI at that first visit. But no, I agree with her, you know, her or him or whoever the orthopedic surgeon was. I agree with that.
All right, and then you talked about you like to get them into physical therapy quickly. Mm-hmm. One of the tools that we use here a lot is Compex, which some people may use something that's like Russian stem, or, you know, basically just E-stem for the muscle hypertrophy or muscle strengthening, not tens for the pain relief. But one of the doctors, I can't remember which one, told her that she needs to be really cautious because if she put it on one of the muscles, then it could pull the patella back out of the joint. Do you have any thoughts there? I know it's kind of vague.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I agree with you. I think, you know, doing everything you can to strengthen the quad and especially the VMO. I mean, I think that's the right thing to do. What's the device you use? I'm not super familiar with it.
It's called Compex. So like complex without the L. And it's essentially the Russian stem if you were to use one of the expensive stem machines. So it'll contract the muscle for like 10 seconds and then release it for 10. So if you're working alongside of it, then you're squeezing your muscle and it's squeezing your muscle. So it provides a more complete muscle contraction. And we use it a lot with post-surgical when they're, you know, needing to relearn how to do the muscle.
Does it work?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So
what makes it Russian?
That's just like the phase of the stem. I don't know. I mean, that's just what it's called. And I would assume it's from something where way back in the day, the Russians used it to grow their muscles stronger. You know, use some sort of electrical stimulation to help hypertrophy muscles. And then you just, okay, well, we'll use this in rehab as well. But yeah. I don't want to be called like a racist or something for, for making some sort of assumption. So.
But it's not like Rocky Five. It's not, it didn't come from, you know, Ivan Drago or anything like that.
Yeah. I really don't know. I mean, it just, you know, I've always known of, it's called Russian stem. That's where it's not tens for, but it's a like intense contraction to make the muscle contract where
interesting.
You can't do it or to assist you in doing it.
You know, I'm going to look into that. I'm going to ask my therapist about that. What about BFR, about blood flow restriction? Do you use that in your practice or do you have any thoughts on that?
So we do. I know using the Delphi unit, those are really expensive. They're, you know, you have to go to the training and all that kind of stuff. But that's what we got a grant, and we use the BFR for the Delphi BFR unit here, and the team at Owens Recovery Science. They've been fantastic helping me out. You know, I've done several video calls. BFR, I think, is a game changer. Like it's something that truly makes a difference. And some of the research that they've done. When partnered with Houston Methodist here, the patients were able to return like up to a month sooner to normal activity. And so we use it for any of our long-term rehabs. We don't necessarily use it for somebody with like an ankle sprain, which you can, but just because of the volume of patients and the stuff we have going on, we just haven't really utilized it for anything but the longer term people. But BFR, you know, I think it definitely would have helped her, and I offered, I was like, hey, you can come over here and do this stuff, but you know, it didn't work out for her. So
yeah. Now if you do BFR, if you have an MPFL reconstruction or an ACL, when do you start it? At what phase of rehab?
Usually if it's post-surgical, like, I mean, we've done it on a femur fracture, but we just said, hey, is it okay if we do this? You know, we just check with the physician and they said, yeah, let me check. So with BFR, as long as the physician is okay with it, you can start right away. Because even if nothing else, you can just put the BFR on there and them, it'd be passive, right? And so it creates that. And so I know John A. Owens talks about when they're using it, like with the military guys and things like that, they'll do it like the next day after surgery. But again, those surgeons have seen it. They understand what's going on. They give that approval right away. And so with us, usually we're not seeing a kid for a week or so after surgery, because most of the time they're homebound for a week, that kind of thing. But we would start it as soon as allowed by the physician.
Yeah, I think it's a game changer. You know, Johnny was here in San Antonio when I was in the military. So he worked at the Center for the Intrepid and at Brooke Army Medical Center. I think it's called San Antonio Military Medical Center. But no, it's a game changer. So I think it's fantastic. I'm definitely a disciple or a believer in it. I've seen it used in collegiate professional athletes. So it makes sense to me. You know, it makes sense mechanically, and just you know, seems like a reasonable thing to do. And I think we've seen the results from it. So. Yeah, it's a great tool. It's a good tool. What about when you get patients back, and I'm going to pick your brain, when you start returning them, you know, 4 months, 5 months out, you know, patients often, they really get to love their brace, you know, the Palumbo brace or patellar stabilizing brace, and they like it. It's a little bit of a, you know, safety blanket, if you will. And I really try to get them out of it at some point. I tell them, hey, look, you know, we don't want you relying on this forever. We want your muscles, your anatomy to be the brace. You know, I don't want you to rely on it. Obviously you can use it for a little while, but not forever. What do you think about like KT tape or rock tape, or are you a believer in doing that for the athlete that's 5, 6, 7 months out and just needs a little bit of, I don't know, memory, muscle memory or reminder or a little bit of a support? When do you incorporate that?
So my coworker, Sophia, she uses KT tape for situations like that. Mm-hmm. When they need just a little bit of something, you know, I don't, I've seen the KT tape work in swelling situations. It helps reduce the edema, that kind of thing. But people overuse it because they see somebody put it on their shoulder and, oh, okay, well, it fixes everything. But it does give you that biofeedback. I've done it before where we had a volleyball girl. She needed to continue to pull her shoulders back. And so we put it kind of, you know, she had her retracted scapulas, and then we put the tape across there. And then that way, when the tape stretched, it reminded her, okay, hey, wait, I got to pull them back. I got to help set them so that I don't have that same issue. And so I think that the sensory or biofeedback from the tape alone is a really good tool in that situation where you're trying to get them out of the brace. Okay, well, here, let's put the tape on there to give you that sense there's something there that gets to give you that biofeedback. I think it's a really good tool if you can, you know, use that as a step out. And again, just say, hey, we're going to use this just as long as we need to, and then go from there. And you?
No, it's great. Yeah. I mean, we've always, you know, we laugh, you know, you see you run a half marathon or a marathon, you see the patients that have, you know, an entire roll of KT tape everywhere. And, mm-hmm. you know, so there's definitely potential to probably overuse it, or not overuse it, but use it where it's not actually doing anything. But it seems like this is an indication where it probably helps you. So, cool. Very good. Very good.
All right. So we just have a few minutes left. Anything you feel like we missed about patellar instability as athletic trainers, sort of taking care of patients that could really change the game, or just give us that one little bit of knowledge that we just didn't cover?
No, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, keep an eye out for loose bodies. If you're as an athletic trainer, if you have a patellar dislocation, you're like, it's just patellar dislocation, but their effusion is not going away, or their motion is not responding, or they're having mechanical symptoms, then always have, you know, have that in the back of your mind. Hey, could they have a big loose body? Could they have knocked off a piece of cartilage? And I think the other thing is just recognizing that this is not a benign event. We know that young patients, especially with risk factors, you know, have a pretty significant risk of it happening again. So, you know, it's not a, you know, an ankle sprain, you know, hey, it's going to get better and don't sweat it. You know, this is really can be a life-changing event. You want to be aggressive with your treatment. Really, really, you know, we didn't really talk much about home exercise, but I think this is where home exercise is so important, where, you know, patients have to do these things, you know, forever, just to try to keep it from happening again.
Forever, like, so
much like forever, ever
should be doing like 3 days a week of home exercises or something.
I think so. I think everybody should be doing that.
Well, okay. Yeah.
But no, I think no, they've got to make it part of their life. And it doesn't mean they need to spend an hour every day, but spending 10, 15 minutes, you know, a couple times a week working on their quads, their abductors, working on their core strength. You know, I mean, I think we should all probably be doing that, especially our athletes, but yeah. No, I appreciate you letting me come back.
Yeah. And, you know, last time we had the live conversation, and I know some people were asking for some shoulder talks. And so again, we'll get that scheduled. Hopefully we'll have the live and Zoom worked out at the same time. I mentioned in the first part, one of the best ways to get a hold of you is on Instagram. And again, Dr. Jeremy Rush is SATX for San Antonio, Texas, SATX Sports Medicine. So SATX Sports Medicine. If you want to reach out, have him be a guest on your podcast or video call into your classroom, something like that, then reach out there. Also, lots of good resources putting out stuff. I know your kids are into some martial arts stuff. And so commenting and giving the orthopedic surgeons perspective on some of that stuff that's going on there. So
yeah, it's been great. I think between the three kids, we've got football, soccer, baseball, softball, you know, my 6-year-old is doing jujitsu, so she's pretty young in the process, but we've got a little bit of everything. No swimmers, no lacrosse players yet. So,
all right, very good. So again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/patellar instability, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/patellar instability. So for Jeremy, Dr. Rush, and the Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of flavorful Kroger 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound. Then buy two, get two free on select varieties of delicious Doritos, Tostitos, or Ruffles chips, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.